welcome to Volume 43, Number 37 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine, brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. This edition is published on Friday the 15th of September 2023. And in the news this week, work starts on the old Palmer's building and on the A47. The town is to be lit up pink. The police do a U-turn. And Darth Vader has been weighing up Joyland's snails. Hi, I'm Graham, your presenter. And I'm joined by Margaret, your newsreader for the week. As usual, all the details on your local news and events during the next hour. But first, it's the Men's Day on the birthday front. Two birthdays this week, both for gentlemen, as Brian Clitheroe celebrates this coming Monday with Rodney Wheatley blowing out the candles on Friday. Very best wishes to you both from all at Grapevine. It's news time, so we welcome Margaret to the Grapevine microphone.
Hello, I'm Margaret, and I'm bringing you this week's news. And what about the weather? Four of the hottest days of the year, followed by rain of biblical proportions. My goodness, didn't it rain? Anyway, enough of my musings. On with the news. So, if you're sitting comfortably, I'll begin. The body of a man in his 20s has been found by a derelict pub. Police discovered the body by the former First and Last pub in Ormsby at 3:41 p.m. on Tuesday. The discovery was made following reports of a man in his 20s going missing from Gorston on Sunday evening. The site was cordoned off by police while crime scene investigators carried out inquiries. The man's death is not being treated as suspicious. A spokesperson for Norfolk Constabulary confirmed that a file will be prepared for the coroner in due course, where formal identification will take place. A company based in Great Yarmouth that designs and plans retail spaces has crossed a milestone. CA Design Services, CADS, on Hewitt Road, has announced its acquisition by Turn Capital, which invests in software and technology-led businesses. The decision to join forces with Turn was made by the CADS board with its Dutch owners Boskalis. Over the last 40 years, CADS has found customers in 25 countries across five continents, serving global brands and international retailers. The company uses in-house surveys, 3D visualization teams, and space planning experts in grocery, fashion, DIY, pharmacy, PFS, and other retail environments. And they work with Shell, Sainsbury's, Lidl, B&Q, and John Lewis, among other retailers. Guy Moats, director of CADS, said, "We are excited about the opportunities this acquisition brings to CADS and all those who've been part of our journey. The team at Turn share our values and commitment to excellence, and we are confident that this partnership will accelerate our growth and create new avenues for success." Co-director Aaron Wright said, "This acquisition is a testament to the dedication and hard work of CADS employees, who have played an integral role in building our company's reputation and success. More importantly, there will be no change operationally in terms of the services and excellent level of support we provide to our customers." Karthik Dasari, Managing Director of Turn, said, "We're excited to be supporting CADS on their growth journey as a standalone group. Their market-leading services and software have already delivered significant benefits to their customers. At Turn, we take a hands-on approach and work very closely with businesses to help them scale using our deep operational experience, know-how and talent network. More than half a dozen prominent Great Yarmouth and Gorleston buildings will be illuminated to raise awareness about organ donation. The landmarks that will be bathed in a vibrant display of pink lights include Great Yarmouth Town Hall, the Toll House, St George's Theatre, the Minster, the Arc Cinema and Gorleston Pavilion. The illuminations will run for 7 evenings from Monday, September the 18th, from dusk until late to mark Organ Donation Week. The James Paget University Hospital, which will also be lit up pink, will host an NHS Organ Donation Coffee Morning at the Burridge Centre on Wednesday, September the 20th, open to staff, patients and the public to find out more about the difference organ donation can make. Residents can also show support by joining the Gorleston Cliffs Park Run on Saturday, September the 16th, to help raise awareness about organ donation and wear pink and help turn the town's seafront pink during the run. The Mayor of Great Yarmouth, Penny Carpenter, said, "We encourage everyone to visit these iconic buildings during Organ Donation Week, engage in discussions about this vital cause, and of course, snap a selfie with one of the landmarks in their lit-up glory." Natalie Ashley, Specialist Nurse Organ Donation at the Eastern Organ Donation Services team, said, "More than 7,000 people are waiting currently for an organ transplant in the UK, while on average around 1,400 people donate each year. Not many people die in circumstances that make it possible for them to donate their organs, which is why every potential donor is so precious. Organ donors are special. However, there still aren't enough people donating. One donor can save up to 9 lives, and even more by also donating tissue. People are encouraged to participate in the campaign by sharing photos of the illuminated buildings on social media using the hashtag #LightForLife. A man accused of selling crack cocaine has been told he faces up to 7 years in prison if found guilty. Carl Lake is alleged to have been caught with 10 wraps of drugs prepared for street dealing after being arrested in Great Yarmouth. Prosecutors told Norwich Magistrates Court it was claimed analysis of his phone had also uncovered messages consistent with selling drugs. The 32-year-old of Northgate Street in Great Yarmouth denies possession with intent to supply Class A drugs. District Judge David Wilson told him if found guilty he was potentially facing a lengthy custodial sentence within the charge carrying a maximum term of 7 years imprisonment. He declined an application by Defence Counsel Michael Cole for Lake to be released on bail, ordering he remain in HMP Norwich until a hearing at Norwich Crown Court on October the 11th. A lifeboat crew was called out to rescue a boat which had drifted into reeds after it slipped its mooring while its occupant was sleeping. Hemsby Lifeboat carried out a rescue mission in the early hours of last Wednesday morning to save a small sailing vessel that had drifted away as its mooring came loose overnight. One male occupant was on board the boat, which had become stuck in reeds somewhere between the Waveney River Centre and Summer Leighton, where the rescue team arrived. The man had been sleeping at the time the incident happened and was unsure of his location. The rescue team launched at the river centre quickly located the vessel, putting 2 crew members on board to assist in establishing a tow line and steering. The boat was then towed back up the river to the river centre, where the Lowestoft Coast Guard team assisted with mooring and looked after the man on board. At around 3 a.m., the Hemsby lifeboat crew stood down and returned to base to wash down and prepare their equipment, knowing they had safely moored the stray boat for the night. And some news now from Scrapby. 15 Norfolk ales will be on offer at a beer festival in Scrapby. The Norfolk Beer Festival will be held at the California Tavern between Thursday and Saturday, celebrating real ales and ciders produced in the county. Top tipples by the likes of Woodford's, Mr. Winter's, Humpty Dumpty, Wolf Brewery, Bull of the Woods, Tombstone and Moongazers will be available at the bar throughout the three-day festival, with ciders on offer by East Norfolk Cider. The event was to be officially opened by current parish councillor and former Great Yarmouth Borough Mayor, Mr. Jim Shrimplin. Mr. Shrimplin is also said to be a purveyor of the fine craft beers. California Tavern landlord Bob Gilman said, "I'm really looking forward to converting more people to experience the delights of real ale and cider made right here in our home county. We have a lovely selection on offer, and it's really something Norfolk can be proud of." California Tavern will be open from noon on Thursday, Friday and Saturday and will close at around 11 p.m. A bid to build a sports park has pitted the interests of a village secondary school against the local parish council. Acol Academy, which has a roll of more than 500 students, is seeking permission to build a new multi-use sports area on an unoccupied section of its playing field. According to documents submitted to Broadland District Council, the park would include 3 tennis courts and 2 basketball courts with a 3-metre tall fence. Further 6-metre tall fences would provide backstops at either end of the court to prevent balls from leaving the court and entering homes that neighbour the area. The plans are facing an objection from Acol Parish Council, which said its councillors fully support good sports provision for the young people but believe the site is unsuitable. Clerk Pauline James said the park would be very close to several neighbouring dwellings, especially those in Aldous Road. She also said that the plans provide no details about the operating times for the sports facilities or about any lighting. Even so, the noise from the facilities would be very disturbing for the neighbours, including the very likely event of balls going over the fence into neighbouring gardens, she added. A resident of Aldous Road is also objecting over concerns about the visual aspect of the high-level fencing and noise intrusion. "This is less critical if restricted to school hours and term time, but would not be welcome if used in the evenings, weekends or holidays," they added. The development would be the latest in a series of investments aimed at improving the once ailing school after it was placed into special measures by regulator Ofsted in 2015. Wensum Trust, which runs the school, has invested more than £1 million in improving facilities, including replacing its roofs, windows and heating over the last 8 years. The school was rated good by Ofsted inspectors last year, the second highest rating available. And the next item is about a footpath. Parts of a footpath in a Norfolk village will be resurfaced following resident complaints. Ormsby St Margaret resident Keith Greensize previously sent more than 11 complaints to Norfolk County Council about the footpath along Cromer Road. From February this year, Mr. Greenside sent complaints about the state of the hedge, which was overgrown with weeds, brambles and branches for over 6 months. Mr. Greenside said the overgrown hedge caused a risk to pedestrians, who he had seen choosing to walk on the carriageway rather than risk getting snagged on thorns. He also raised complaints about the uneven surface of the path, which he said added more issues for pedestrians in the village. A Norfolk County Council spokesperson said, "Work to replace sections of the footpaths service will be completed within the next 4 weeks." The spokesperson also said the private boundary hedge was flail cut by the landowner sometime in early July, and Norse Highways trimmed the site later that month to expose its full width. The spokesperson added, "The hedge sits on private land and is therefore the responsibility of the landowner to maintain it." The major project to regenerate an eyesore part of the town has moved a step forward after councillors approved the £26 million budget. The huge project now requires Great Yarmouth Council to begin acquiring the land needed to deliver the North Quay Riverside Gateway scheme. And work is also underway to source an estimated £5 million in funding in order to renovate the historic Vauxhall Bridge as part of the project. But fears have been raised that the costs will go up and up, and that it could take more than a decade to complete. It is hoped the once-in-a-generation development will create a new, vibrant destination in the town, worth £20 million of the scheme funded by the government's Levelling Up Fund. A further £5.1 million will come from the Town Deal Fund, while an additional £2.2 million will be sourced from borrowing. Efforts to acquire land are now expected to begin, which could require compulsory purchasing powers, with £16.4 million set aside from the pot for this. Carl Smith, leader of Great Yarmouth Borough Council, has said the scheme will regenerate an eyesore area of the town and unlock its potential for the benefit of the whole borough. But Trevor Wainwright, leader of the Great Yarmouth Labour Group, fears it could be a potentially expensive and lengthy project. He said, "It's great that this is moving forward, and we are fully in support of the regeneration of the North Quay area, but it is a huge project that will likely take a decade to come to fruition. The £26 million funding sounds like a lot, but a project on this scale will likely cost more. Time is ticking on, with the council facing a deadline of March 2026 to spend the government's funding, otherwise it will have to return it." A man remains in hospital with critical injuries after a stabbing last weekend. He was stabbed during an incident in Great Yarmouth at 10 a.m. on Saturday morning, September the 9th. Two men were assaulted by three other men in an alleyway outside Great Yarmouth Library in Tollhouse Street, with the first man taken to hospital with critical injuries, where he remains stable, and a second man assaulted, sustaining minor injuries. Five people were arrested in connection with the incident and were questioned at Great Yarmouth Police Investigation Centre. Alan Hetherington, 35, of Chaucer Road, Great Yarmouth, Billy Gleason, 21, of Yarmouth Way, Great Yarmouth, and Martin Beth, 32, of Tyrolean Square, Great Yarmouth, were all charged in connection with the incident. All three men have been charged with grievous bodily harm with intent and possession of an offensive weapon, and Beth was also charged with actual bodily harm. The men have been remanded and have appeared at Norwich Magistrates Court. A woman in her 20s and a man in his 40s were arrested on suspicion of assisting an offender and have since been bailed to appear at Great Yarmouth Police Investigation Centre on December the 10th. And this is all about Star Wars, and I'm afraid I know nothing about this. I don't understand the wording or the technology, but you probably do. Anyway, Star Wars. He is famous for wielding a deadly lightsaber and choking insubordinates with his forceful death grip. But last Friday, September the 8th, the galaxy's most feared villain, Darth Vader, took a break from Imperial activities and visited Great Yarmouth. The Dark Lord of the Sith was even seen enjoying a ride on the snails at Joyland. His appearance with other characters from Star Wars on the Golden Mile was organised by the Galactic Troopers, 11 friends from Norfolk and Suffolk who came together to form a science fiction costuming group. They went to Joyland last week to raise awareness about their group and their mission, which is to help small local charities raise money. Wayne Hart, 51, from Brockdish, a village near Diss, said the members all have a wealth of experience in fundraising. After doing this for many years, we've become very much aware that many small or less known charities get overlooked. We would love to change this and help raise the much needed funds that so many of these charities need, he added. He said the Galactic Troopers believe that all money collected should and must go to the charity which they are collecting for, and as such they do not charge to attend any events. Mr. Hart, who dresses as a stormtrooper, said the response to their visit in Great Yarmouth was absolutely brilliant. The group interacted with unsuspecting locals and holidaymakers. There were children running up, wanting to get photographs taken with us, Mr. Hart said. It's people's faces that keep you going, when they smile and you know you've brightened up their day. Galactic Troopers, who are currently touring around Norfolk and Suffolk, are searching for charities that could do with their help. Find them on Facebook.
Sorry, but I couldn't resist jerking my memory with Miko's version of the Star Wars theme from 1977, reminding me of when we started Hospital Radio Year and using that as the theme for the children's programme, which, it gets worse, in our wisdom we called the Dynamic X-Ray Z Show. Heaven help us. And you will be along shortly with a weird Norfolk piece gleaned from our COVID archives when we were online only, about things superstitious. First, though, Margaret with more news.
And this is an appeal. East Coast Pet Rescue in Great Yarmouth has launched a desperate appeal after being inundated with unwanted pets amid the continuing cost of living crisis. The charity has 20 rabbits and cats needing to be adopted at the centre, which is now completely full. Among the cats waiting to find a stable and loving home are Sweet Pea and Dandelion, who've spent their whole lives in and out of catteries and have never had a chance to live in a space of their own. Whitney, a 4-year-old cat, is also looking for a home after she was brought into the centre with a horrific condition from living on the streets. Deborah Cook, manager of East Coast Pet Rescue, said, "Lots of smaller animals are being surrendered due to the cost of living and people not being able to afford to look after them. Many people do not realise what it takes to look after rabbits properly. They are one of the most neglected species, sadly. Anyone who is able to help rehome an animal has been asked to contact East Coast Pet Rescue at East Coast Pet Rescue, that's all one word, East Coast Pet Rescue 2021 at gmail.com, or you can phone 07555 928600. Lifeboat crew from the Great Yarmouth and Gawson RNLI station have been treated to an exclusive tour of the Third River Crossing. RNI volunteers and management visited Great Yarmouth Herring Bridge last Friday to gain reference points during rescue operations. It was determined that the lifeboat's inshore vessel would be able to clear the underneath of the bridge, but currently its offshore lifeboat would require an emergency lift to pass. During the site visit, 6 crew members were also shown around the near-finished development site, which RNLI Captain Lindsay Wigmore said was an incredible feat of engineering. From the control tower, you can see a far distance down the river both ways. The work that has gone into the project is fantastic, and the personnel on board the bridge were very welcoming. We're very grateful to get a glimpse of it in action. The £120 million bridge project, which will connect the A47 at Harfrey's roundabout to the port and the Enterprise Zone via South Deans Road on the other side of the River Yare, and started construction in February 2021. A Norfolk County Council spokesperson said they're still waiting for confirmation of the operational date of the bridge. Sad news now, it's all about closing. Councillors will work closely with businesses in Galston following the announced closure of its Wilko store. The High Street branch of the doomed national retailer announced its closure date for Thursday, September the 21st. On Monday, fears were raised about the future of the once thriving retail area, which saw the closure of its Barclays branch at the end of last year and the upcoming closure of the Boots store. Daniel Candon, Great Yarmouth Borough Council's portfolio holder for economic development and growth, said the council will be working to support businesses in the area. "It's very sad news to hear that Galston Wilko store could not be saved by a buyer," said Mr. Candon. "We must not forget this concerns people's livelihoods. The council has already been working behind the scenes in preparation for any announcement on this store and the pending closure of Boots, so we'll be able to liaise and work closely with local businesses on the High Street who may be worried during this time. The work will continue to go on." Lowestoft's Wilko branch closed its doors for good on September the 12th, with the Great Yarmouth shop closing on Thursday the 13th. And another closure, this one at Scrappy. The East Coast family restaurant at Scrappy took to social media on Monday to inform customers of the unfortunate news. "It is with regret we've made the difficult decision to close the restaurant, effective from October the 26th, the post read, written by owners Simon and Andrea. "Sincere apologies to those we have not managed to tell personally. It was our intention to tell as many face to face, but unfortunately, social media seems to have got there first. Hospitality is a hard business at the best of times, but the last couple of years, rising costs and staffing issues has just felt like a relentless battle. We would like to thank all our customers for their support over the past 10 and a half years. And we would especially like to thank all our fabulous staff for all the hard work in helping us make the East Coast what it was. We will continue to offer our same great food and service and would love to see as many of you as possible until the day we close. This post was met with an outpouring of support, receiving hundreds of disheartened reactions on Facebook, where the restaurant has more than 2,000 followers. And this is all about duelling. Work to pave the way for the duelling of two sections of the A47 in Norfolk is underway, and a road has been temporarily shut as part of the multi-million pound project. Signs have been placed on the road saying work has begun and will continue for the next 2 years, while hundreds of cones have been placed in fields. National Highways bosses have clarified the work, where the road is due to be dualled between Blowfield and North Burlingham and from Easton to North Tuddenham is preparatory work ahead of full-blown construction. The work includes moving utilities pipes, clearing ground, archaeological surveys and putting up fences. At Blowfield, Yarmouth Road has been temporarily shut until the end of the month so vegetation can be cleared. That is so people who use nearby allotments will still be able to gain access when water low is shut, when the full-blown duelling work is done. On the stretch due to be dualled between North Tuddenham and Easton, work is being done to the entrance of a field near Hollingham Roundabout. National Highways said it is to create a safe entrance to allow large and slow vehicles to safely exit the A47 at that point. As previously reported, a new contractor is being sought to do the work on Thickthorn Roundabout on the edge of Norwich. That is after the departure of contractor Galliford Try from that element of the scheme, although they will still work on the two road duelling projects. It's likely to be next spring before work starts in earnest. Climate campaigner Dr. Andrew Boswell is still attempting to secure an appeal over a High Court judge's decision to dismiss his legal challenge over the A47 work. This prompted criticism from two of the county's senior Conservatives this week, who said he was misguided and playing games at the taxpayers' expense. A spokesman for National Highways said, "The works on the A47 schemes are being carried out under the powers contained in the development consent orders. The validity of these orders has been questioned by a judicial review, following which the orders were upheld by the High Court. The orders remain in full force and effect, and accordingly, National Highways is entitled to carry out the works." And this is quite a sad bit of news. A Galston woman who was killed by a botched cosmetic surgery overseas was not given sufficient information about the risks, a coroner has ruled. Melissa Kerr died at the age of 31 after travelling to Turkey for a Brazilian butt lift procedure, an augmentation of the buttock using a patient's own fat tissue. The controversial operation is temporarily banned in the United Kingdom, but is still carried out overseas. An inquest into Miss Kerr's death heard that she had died after injected fat entered one of her veins, therefore moving and blocking her pulmonary artery. The court heard Miss Kerr, a psychological well-being practitioner, had paid £3,200 for the surgery and travelled to Istanbul for the procedure. But she did so only having been given limited information regarding the risk and mortality rate associated with a controversial procedure. Simon Withy, a consultant plastic surgeon who prepared a report for the court, said it was quite possible that if the risk were explained before she was financially committed to proceed, she would not have done so. The court heard Miss Kerr had asked the private Medicana Hasnedvar Hospital four times for photographs of previous patients and admitted to being a bit nervous, but was not provided further information before going ahead with the operation. The death led Norfolk coroner Jacqueline Lake to call for the UK government to make more information available to people considering the so-called cosmetic tourism. Mrs. Lake said Miss Kerr wasn't seen by a surgeon or clinician prior to the date of her procedure. Miss Kerr underwent a limited assessment prior to the procedure and was provided with limited information regarding the risks and mortality rate associated with this procedure. Mr. Withy said the death rates associated with the procedure are likely to be in excess of 1 in 4,000. Mrs. Lake added that certain techniques used by the surgeons on Miss Kerr increased the risk of embolism occurring and that a high number of patients had died in similar circumstances. She added there had been the release of an international alert to surgeons regarding the high mortality rate associated with this procedure. There has also been the introduction of a voluntary moratorium on this procedure in the UK. This clearly had not been followed in Turkey. I am concerned patients are not being made aware of the risk or the mortality rate associated with such surgery. I don't have any authority over hospitals in Turkey, and I also appreciate the UK government has no control over what happens in other countries. However, the danger our citizens will continue to travel abroad for such procedures continues, though citizens are unaware of the risks involved. Mrs. Lake said she would be writing to Health Secretary Steve Barclay to urge the government to ramp up public awareness of the private surgery overseas situation. She added, I'm of the view that future deaths can be prevented by way of better information. Miss Kerr died at the Turkish hospital on November the 19th, 2019, with her medical cause of death recorded as pulmonary thromboembolism. Mrs. Lake gave a narrative conclusion stating Miss Kerr had died after cosmetic surgery. Following her death, Miss Kerr's twin sister Natasha started a fundraising page in her memory, which raised more than £2,000. In a statement provided to the BBC following the inquest, her family had said they were devastated. They said, we hope in the future individuals are given proper consideration before travelling to Turkey for cosmetic tourism. The inquest comes after similar calls were made by plastic surgeons locally. Elaine Sassoon, a plastic surgeon based at Spy Hospital in Norwich, has previously urged people to do their research before committing to procedures abroad. A Galston woman who was served a 28-day eviction notice from her Bungie care home is being moved to Lincolnshire today. Christine Lee, 75, has been a resident of All Hallows care home for the past 12 months. Ms. Lee and her family complained about the decision to keep her at All Hallows after an initial 28-day assessment last August. Instead, Ms. Lee wanted to return to her flat at St. Augustine's Place assisted living complex in Galston. However, Norfolk County Council said, when someone's needs are particularly high, it is not possible to provide the right, safe level of care in someone's home. Ms. Lee's daughter, Linda Taylor, denies that Ms. Lee's care needs had changed from when she was residing at St. Augustine's. Last month, Ms. Lee received a 28-day notice of a cancellation of contract from Norse Care, who oversees both All Hallows and St. Augustine's, effectively evicting Ms. Lee from the care home and leaving her without care if she returns to her Galston home. Ms. Taylor confirmed that her mother will be arriving at the Westerly Residential Care Home for the Elderly in Lincolnshire near her family on Thursday. But Mum knows her mind. She still wants to go home to Galston, Ms. Taylor said. A project to trap and kill every American mink in the country has been hailed as a success, as the number of threatened water voles in the Norfolk Broads has bounced back. Efforts to eradicate mink, carnivorous mammals belonging to the same family as weasels, otters and ferrets, began in Norfolk in 2003. The invasive species were introduced and bred for fur in the 1920s, along with other rodent species called coypew. Both species bred quickly in the favourable wetland habitat of the Broads. Nationally, mink were responsible for causing a 90% decline in water vole populations, which led to the extinction of the species in many areas. The last remaining coypew were eradicated in 1989, but mink remained at large. In the first 2.5 years of the Waterlife Recovery East, formerly Norfolk Mink Project Initiative, almost 300 mink were trapped on the River Wensum alone. Now, with only 7 mink caught in Norfolk this year, project leaders believe the species is close to being eradicated across the region. Simon Baker from the Trust said, "The support from partners and volunteers has allowed us to get to a point where mink have been almost eradicated from a core area of Norfolk and Suffolk, and that includes the Broads. We are cautiously optimistic, therefore, that mink eradication is possible. Our work with a dedicated community around our river networks, alongside recent additional funding and a scientific approach, is helping to protect wildlife and see water voles flourishing in the Broads again. There are currently around 340 smart traps and traps on floating rafts set in Norfolk. When the trap door shuts in a smart trap, it does not harm the animal caught inside, but triggers a text to a volunteer, who inspects the trap and releases anything other than mink back to the wild. The Broads Authority has contributed to the programme since 2007.
Hello, this is Andy with another of the weird Norfolk stories. And this one concerns bringing the dead back to life at Broomholme Priory. The ruins are spectacular and hint at a majesty long since claimed by time. But the broken walls of Broomholme Priory hide an even bigger secret. They once housed a holy relic said to be so powerful it could raise the dead. Also known as Bacton Abbey or Broomholme Priory, the building was founded 1113 by William de Glanville as a sister abbey of near Castle Acre and stands as a lonely sentry in fields just off the scenic northeast Norfolk coast road. These days, Bacton's fame is bound up in gas. But travel back in time to 1205, and Bacton was nothing short of miraculous. For the first century of its life, Broomholme was a staging post on the pilgrim route to Walsingham. But in 1205, its fortunes changed, thanks to a tiny wooden cross, no bigger than a man's hand, which, it was said, was a relic of the true cross on which Jesus died. Soldiers of the Fourth Crusade had ransacked Constantinople, bringing back a hoard of treasure, both spiritual and secular. A local priest, who had been with the emperor in Constantinople, brought back the 2 pieces of wood, which he offered to the Clunikiel monks at Broomholme, on condition that he and his sons were admitted to the priory. The monastery, poor in worldly goods but rich in faith, believed the priest and agreed to his terms. His cross, said to have been made by St. Helena from parts of the cross to which Christ's hands and feet was nailed, was set up in the church and it proved to be Broomholme's salvation. Matthew Paris's illuminated medieval manuscript, Chronica Magiana, contained information about the cross, which drew from Flores Hostarium by Roger of Wendhoven in his Annals for 1223. In the same year, divine miracles became frequent occurrences at Broomholm, so the glory and honour of the life-giving cross on which the Saviour of the world suffered for the redemption of mankind, it reads. The manuscript then reveals that the relic was brought to Broomholm by King Baldwin's chaplain, who had already been refused by several other monasteries, but was enthusiastically welcomed in Norfolk. In this year, divine miracles began to be wrought in that monastery to the praise and glory of the life-giving cross. For there the dead were restored to life, the blind recovered their sight, and any sick person who approached the aforesaid cross with faith went away safe and sound. In all, 39 people were raised from the dead. 19 people had their sight restored, and pilgrims, including Henry III, flocked to Broomholm with gracious offerings. The cross is mentioned in Reeve's tale, the third of Geoffrey Chaucer's Canterbury Tales written in the 1380s. Miller Simkin lives near Cambridge and steals the wheaten meal brought to him for grinding. Two students set out to get revenge for their college steward who fell victim to Simkin and orchestrate a farce-like situation involving wives, daughters and bed-hopping. At one point, the miller's wife is woken when her husband falls. "Help," she screamed, "Holy Cross at Broomholm, keep us, Lord, into our hands." Within 50 years of Chaucer's work, the end would be nigh for Broomholm's claim to fame. In 1424, Sir Hugh Pye, a Protestant chaplain from Norwich, was tried before the Bishop of Norwich for having thrown the relic on a fire. In the Acts and Monuments of John Fox of 1424, it says that Pye was brought before the bishop on July the 5th, 1424, for holding these opinions following: that people ought not to go on pilgrimage, that the people ought not to give alms, that the image of the cross and other images are not to be worshipped. Pye denied the charges, whereupon he had a day appointed to purge himself by the witness of 3 laymen and 3 priests. That done so, he was sworn as the other before and so dismissed. 2 years later, the bishop recalled Pye regarding the death of William White, who had been burned at the stake for heresy and been associated with White, a fellow Lollard. Pye was reprieved yet again, but Broomholm Priory had lost its miraculous attraction, and never again wealthy visitors keen to part with gifts in return for touching wood. We'll be right back.
Amy Stewart, joining in with the knock on wood theme. Okay, it's time to get you completely up to date with the rest of this week's local news.
Tens of thousands of visitors are expected in Great Yarmouth this weekend as the returning Out There Festival celebrates its 15th birthday. The International Festival of Outdoor Arts and Circus will be taking place across the town, delivering more than 100 wacky and wonderful performances from five continents. From St George's Park, the theatre, the Drill House, Trafalgar Road, Blackfriars Road and the seafront, the town will be abuzz with artistic displays from around the world. Focusing on all things circus, outdoor arts and street acts, the Out There Festival is one of the largest street art events in the county. Over its 15 previous instalments, the festival has provided more than 2,000 performances, works and projects, over 3,000 artists from 50 countries, and had more than 30,000 youth and community participants perform in front of around 1 million people. Out There officially kicks off at 5 p.m. on Friday at St George's Park, with music from DJ Beemore McVouty, DJ Laslord, and the vinyl obsessive DJ Vincent 1000. DJ Jazzlord will be playing an eclectic mix of 50s to 70s R&B, soul, funk, ska, world and jazz. And there will also be live music by the funk, pop and soul band The High Points. This year's highlights include the ticketed event for Friday and Saturday nights, French Circus Company at St Nicholas Park South. Visitors will be treated to a visual and thrilling performance of contemporary circus and tightrope entertainment to the sounds of Bristolian trip-hop music. Tickets are pay what you can, with options ranging from naught to £10. The Whale by Circo Rumbaba is Sunday's highlight event. All bold explorers are invited to squeeze into the belly of an enormous inflatable sperm whale, where visitors find themselves in the depths of the bubbling, kelp-swirling ocean. Those that do will encounter an acrobatic diver who leads them swimming through the age-old journey of the life of an ancient leatherback turtle. Stories are told through puppets, comedy and music. And visitors are invited to explore the tale of sea creatures and their battle to survive in an ocean full of rubbish. Out There's Drillers, circus school students will also be taking the spotlight in We Are Yarmouth on Saturday and Sunday. The youth group have planted a flag and claimed the town as the capital of galactic circus. There will also be the premiere of the Losers Arcade over the weekend. Madcap games and challenges at the only arcade where taking part and becoming one of the gang is far more valued than actually doing well. Sister Ruth will be roaming the festival with an extravagantly decorated baby grand piano on wheels. Catch her flying down the road preaching comedy patter, dancing offbeat and reciting your favourite songs. And there's food for every mood at St George's Park. Head on over for a selection of delicious eats from a variety of vendors. Also, drop into Mermadelica in the park for a unique alfresco experience with delicious ice cream, fresh coffee and yummy grub throughout the weekend. The Drill House on York Road will also be open as the Festival Lounge, which will be a retreat from the crowds with drinks and light bites available, as well as craft activities for children. And warm weather is expected throughout the entire weekend, with highs of 21 degrees on Friday and Saturday. Sunday will be a little bit cooler with cloudy conditions and a moderate breeze. For more information, visit Out There Arts on Facebook. A late-night pub that had the worst record of incidents in Norfolk will have to stop serving earlier after Norfolk Police requested a review of its licence. The King Street pub, still signed as Peggotty's and originally the St George's Wine Vaults, has avoided being shut down altogether but has been told to call last orders at 1 a.m. despite opening until 4 a.m. Owner Gail Smith and her barrister have said they will appeal the flawed decision, which they claim was made without any evidential basis. Duncan Craig, representing Miss Smith, said, "In my 11 years of practice, this is possibly the most flawed decision a client has been subject to. We will be appealing, and as such the restriction will not take effect until the appeal is determined. The committee has plucked 1 a.m. out of thin air, without any evidential basis whatsoever." A total of 80 police incidents were reported at or around the pub in just a 12-month period, resulting in officers calling for the venue's hours to be cut to reduce the issues. When the proceedings started against the bar, it had the worst record of incidents across the county, according to Chris Brooks, Norfolk Police's licensing officer. Miss Smith, who runs two other venues, argued that she and her team had gone over and beyond to make improvements, and there had been a huge drop in incidents in 2023. This included having door staff 7 days a week and stricter rules on entry, including mandatory searches and refusal if customers were deemed too drunk. Mr. Craig said the majority of problems followed the COVID lockdown, where people went a bit nuts when pubs and clubs reopened. It was also the only late-night venue open until 4 a.m. operating at the time. He said Miss Smith's record showed she was a responsible operator and that the review of her licence had come as a shock to her after making positive changes to the bar. But a police report to the council's licensing committee alleged that problems persisted and people, particularly women, were being left in a vulnerable state and a review was needed. It highlighted one night in particular where a woman was found to be at the back of the venue, passed out and had soiled herself, according to the report. The police used the bar's incident log as evidence of continued high levels of drunkenness at the venue, highlighting occasions when people had been refused service. But this was dismissed as being an inappropriate argument by Mr. Craig, arguing Miss Smith shouldn't be penalised for being a responsible operator and maintaining good record keeping. In her closing statement, Miss Smith said, "We took on the bar 2 days before the first lockdown was announced. When we opened in 2022, it was very challenging and had to work quickly to get to the bottom of these issues. The last thing I want is to have to tell my staff they don't have a job anymore." After hearing Miss Smith's defence and Norfolk Police's evidence, Great Yarmouth Council's licensing committee decided to take action to reduce the hours the bar could serve alcohol. Conditions to limit the impact of noise from the venue were also agreed as part of the verdict. The future of the bar remains in doubt until the appeal is decided, which will likely be next year. The policeman at the centre of the scandal which has engulfed Norfolk Police could be sacked after a U-turn by the constabulary. Initially, Norfolk Constabulary accepted PC Carl Warren's claim that he had suffered amnesia at the time of the incident. But after an Independent Office for Police Conduct, IOPC, ruling, the force has backtracked. PC Warren will now face a gross misconduct hearing. PC Warren, at the time an armed officer, failed to stop after driving into the back of a woman's car at almost 50 miles per hour, an incident which has been dubbed Amnesia Gate. The police watchdog said too much emphasis had been placed on contradictory and conflicting medical evidence that he had been suffering amnesia during and immediately after the crash. Norfolk Police was given 28 days to inform the Norwich woman he crashed into how it intended to proceed following the IOPC review recommendations. Welcoming the news, the victim, 34, said, "Hopefully at these hearings the truth will come out. And the biggest question now is, if Warren has had episodes like this before, why was he still checking out a gun before every shift? And did anyone else in the force know? And why was the recording of this first interview deleted? I just want some answers. Then hopefully the police can begin to rebuild the trust of the people of Norfolk." In its official response, seen by the EDP, Detective Superintendent Tracy Little, the head of Norfolk Police's professional standards, said PC Warren will now be subject to a hearing where the maximum outcome could be dismissal without notice. She said further clarification had been sought over the case to answer test applied to the medical evidence, but the force had now accepted the IOPC recommendation and will be proceeding with disciplinary proceedings against PC Warren. The armed officer drove a BMW X5 marked vehicle into the back of an Audi on the A146 between Beccles and Lowestoft in March 2022. A second road policing officer, PC Ryan Hargrave, who was a passenger, is also facing disciplinary proceedings for not reporting the crash at the time. Police have confirmed he will face a lesser misconduct meeting where the maximum outcome could be a final written warning on October the 7th. The meeting at police headquarters at Wyndham, to be chaired by Superintendent Louis Provart, will see the officer represented by a member of Norfolk Police Federation, the body which supports rank and file officers. Work has started on a £17 million revamp, converting the former Palmer's store into an education centre and library. Construction crews moved into the old Palmer's building in Great Yarmouth Marketplace on Tuesday, as the redevelopment of the landmark building got underway. Scheduled to open in autumn 2024, the site will host the town's library and an education centre. Recently revealed to be named The Place, it will also house higher education classes on behalf of the University of Suffolk and East Coast College. Initial work at The Place will be on the roof, which needs to be completely replaced. Morgan Sindel Construction is in charge of the refurbishment. They recently led the £26 million construction of the new Marina Centre. Carl Smith, leader of Great Yarmouth Borough Council, said, "It's extremely exciting for Great Yarmouth to finally see this much-loved building being given a new lease of life. We're delighted to be once again working with Morgan Sindel. And now the building works are underway, it won't be long until this fantastic venue will open its doors and begin providing first-class education and services for the people of the borough. Once the building is fully waterproof, crews will fit out the interior. At the end of last year, shop fittings were stripped out with all asbestos and internal non-load-bearing partitions also removed. The place will be home to Norfolk County Council's Great Yarmouth Public Library, currently located in Tolhouse Street, along with adult learning, a registry office and other community services such as Citizens Advice. The new University Learning Centre at The Place will see East Coast College and the University of Suffolk offer higher education and adult learning courses. The Place project is being funded via £8.1 million from the government's town deal, with a further £3.4 million from the Future High Streets Fund. East Coast College and the University of Suffolk are contributing £3.5 million and Norfolk County Council £2 million. The building's new name has received some negative responses online, claiming it to sound too ambiguous. The 5,300 square metre five-storey building's transformation aims to increase the number of people in Great Yarmouth who hold qualifications above level 4, so they can obtain high quality and sustainable jobs. Stuart Rimmer, chief executive at East Coast College, said, "Bringing more adult learning and higher university study into the heart of the town makes it easier to access. We'll be able to bring a new offer to a greater number of residents. We're really proud to be a key partner in this once-in-a-generation opportunity to increase university study in the borough." Professor Mohammed Dastbaz, Deputy Vice-Chancellor of the University of Suffolk, said, "With work starting on the construction of the place, we are all moving one step closer to improving access to higher education in Great Yarmouth and the surrounding area, and meeting our vision of raising aspirations and opportunities within the region."
Well, that's it for this week's recording, which is copyright 2023 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. If you need to contact us, you can do so via our website at grapevinegy.org or telephone us on 07947 946 493, where you can access our regularly checked answering service. Next week, your newsreader will be Andy, so we look forward to welcoming you then for much more of your local news. In the meantime, from all at Grapevine, stay safe and well, and bye for now.